You're listening to BBC Radio 3 on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. It's 2 minutes past 11 and time for Jazz Lineup. Here's Julian Joseph.
Hello and welcome to the Chapel Arts Centre, Bath, and a capacity audience for Jazz Lineup's annual outing to this, the Bath International Music Fest. Tonight we bring you individuality, spontaneity, and continuity, not to mention adaptability, as all the players tonight have appeared on this programme in other bands and combinations. Pianist Robert Mitchell has been a unique artist since he first appeared on the scene with the M-bass Steve Coleman and Steve Williamson-inspired band Quite Sane. He's an intelligent and mathematical musical mind with a blinding pianistic virtuosity that reveals a deep seriousness and classical training. His ear for contemporary sounds fused with elements from funk, pop, classical, and jazz combined to make Mitchell a leader with vision and ideas with groups like Panacea, Trio, and collaborations with artists like violinist Omar Puente and saxophonist Julian Siegel, who you'll hear later with Partisans. He's also one of the most distinctive solo pianists I've heard in improvised music, so be prepared for a night of fulfilling creativity. Saxophonist Julian Siegel is well established as a band leader and musician and one of the most ubiquitous of all British jazz players, with the respect of his peers as an artist who brings an individual and contemporary flavour to every project he graces. Phil Robson, in many ways, reflects the same principles on guitar, an experimental leader, creative force and musician with a profound connection to the tradition. Put the two of these guys together with Thad Kelly on bass and New Yorker Gene Caldarazzo on drums, and you get Partisans, a quartet that has been a working unit for over a decade. What distinguishes Partisans for me is that they are a group of great individuals who together reflect the myriad of influences contemporary jazz draws from, with a cohesion and flair that transcends category. So, we have a great night of good music in store for you. And to start proceedings with his solo set and with the tune Lucid Dreamt, please welcome Mr. Robert Mitchell. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was called Lucid Dreamt. This next one I'm going to do is called The Envoy. Thank you. Thank you.
That was Robert Mitchell playing solo at the Chapel Arts Centre as part of the Bath International Music Fest. And earlier today, I asked Robert about his preparation for this solo set.
It's kind of an interesting stage for me at the moment because I have had a solo album out a few years ago, and even then the music dated back even further to a near enough 10-year-old commission at Wapping Arts Centre, which was a set of solo concerts with people like Orrin Marshall and Orphy Robinson, Ben Davis. Was a fantastic event. And I'm flitting between keeping some of those, some of my favourite moments of that set of music, and a few other newer things. One piece I'm going to do tonight called Lucid Dreamt is actually a solo arrangement of a song, and that's going to be on my next album with my first and oldest project, a band called Panacea. And another is a first attempt at a solo left-hand tiny tune, as I've been doing some exploring in that area. As, yes, you noticed a couple of minutes ago, I'm left-handed, so it's a whole other a whole other chat we'll have to have another time. But yes, knowing about, you know, Ornette and Winton and a number of others, it's a very interesting area in music and just in life, the whole history of the whole left-handed thing and
Mark
how people
Mondesi.
Have... Wow, yes, of course. I mean, you know, it's a wonderful kind of list. But, yeah, so it's going to be a mix of old and new. Okay, so I'm getting slapped by the left hand.
It seems you lefties are quite wired differently. Do you find it's that way? Because, okay, if I focus directly on your piano playing... Your choice of material, it's not the sort of taking the standard repertoire and sort of working through that. It's a compositional look at things, and it seems to be something that is really deeply embedded from your classical training.
Yes, I mean, I have loved and have had very intense periods with a number of different composers over the years, going on the classical side from Handel, Scarlatti, Rachmaninoff, which is kind of ongoing, and Bartok. There's been lots of a period spent studying the music before I got into the jazz thing and improvising and free improvising and playing with you know, R&B and soul and hip hop, you know, MCs and all sorts of people. So that kind of rigor and the structures, sometimes consciously, you know, a lot of times unconsciously, have all had an impact on what I do. And even regards just jazz standard playing as well, there's still a lot of interesting things and devices and ways that people have of making a story kind of come across. So I am looking forward to, you know, doing some more exploring of the standard repertoire as well, as I did a Wayne Shorter project a few years ago, which was amazingly enjoyable, with Norma Winstone and Mike Mondesi. So,
is that where Dance Cadaverous carried on from?
Yes, yeah. It was. It didn't kind of make the list then, but it was very close.
So the specifics of your playing, you draw a lot from classical music, and you're sort of a deep orchestrator. I mean, I noticed that, you know, there are very pianistic things that you do, things that you've thought about, certain kinds of riffs you deal with in the left hand, and as you say, it sort of experiments in coordination as well.
Yes, I have such a bunch of impressions left by just pianists per se doing what they do. So these stretch from Cecil Taylor and Monk and their completely unique kind of approach to the piano. Two very pianistic, hyper-pianists, if you like, Art Tatum, Oscar, Richter, Horowitz, all sorts of people over the years. And I think, like anything, it's an ongoing process, but the joy of blending down, you know, any little approach and you know, coming up with something that fits what you want to do really well. It's a lot of hard work and it's ongoing. But
say with Richter and Gilels, are you drawing directly from the way perhaps they would make an arrangement of a familiar classical piece, or
yes,
or is it also more in their repertoire, their choice of repertoire and composer?
It's partly this, but it's very much the rigor and the approach to the instrument itself as something I love. And I mean, I have had some great discussions with my friend Cuban violinist Omar Puente, with his background in Cuba, the Russian classical
training,
yes, of course, is extremely prevalent, and he has some very interesting stories which will have to be saved for another time. But the level of discipline, the level of detail that was just required as soon as you stepped in the door for a class is something I definitely know informs him to this day, you know, even though he was learning, you know, well over 40 years ago. But there is a measure of that which I think, you know, it's like any great teacher, any great experience. There are lessons and there are little bits of encouragement, little bits of you know, being told off that stay with you forever, and you always kind of see and want this. As you breathe in to begin playing, you have all these things and all these ideas, in spite of your experiences, you know, on the road and traveling and recording and stuff. They still inform me and they still make me want to absorb them and improve, so that they are effortless and they are not work. They become a, you know, a pleasurable thing. But I think at the time, especially when you're very young and, you know, all you want to do is you know, kick a ball around or do something else, to have that suddenly all these things thrown at you to kind of say, well, if you want to do this at a level, you know, these things, you need to deal with some of these things, and some of them maybe, you know, you may have a natural affinity for, others you have to work very hard. I can tell with, you know, lots of different instrumentalists, they're just the approach. It may not necessarily be about Russia or about anywhere in particular, but there's a certain approach to the instrument, which, and with pianists, it goes beyond being pianistic or not. So it's something I think that there is in common that Cecil or, you know, Oscar Peterson or Art Tatum has with the instrument, that it actually becomes something that's just a way of getting to amazing ideas. But it's a lot of work, well, as everyone knows, to get there.
There's a great personal approach there, Robert, and we're really excited about the solo concert. So thank you for speaking with us.
Pleasure. Thank you, Julian. Thank you. That was called Equinocturne. This one is called Priceless. These are a mixture of some different tunes from my album Equinox, a solo album of a few years ago, which is available here. And the very first tune, Lucid Dreamt, is a solo version of a song from an upcoming album of mine, coming out later this year on Edition. So I hope you enjoy this next one called Priceless. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'd love to thank everybody here for coming down. Thank you so much. Magnificent festival, as usual, so many great things going on. Partisans about to blow the roof off. To thank Keith, Julian, everyone at Jazz Lineup, everyone at the BBC, everyone here at the Chapel Arts Centre. I'm going to do a minuscule left-hand thing. This is called The Glimpse. My name is Robert Mitchell. Love to see you again another time. Thank you so much. Take care. Thank you.
The gifted Robert Mitchell playing The Glimpse, a piece composed entirely for left hand and executed beautifully. Please show your appreciation for Robert Mitchell. Mind a true original. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 at the 2010 Bath International Music Fest. In a moment, Partisans, but first a word from the festival director, Joanna McGregor. Earlier this afternoon, I asked her about the broad range of this year's festival.
It starts a couple of years in advance, okay. You know, because I think you have to have your big ideas in place. And then you just wait for to see who's around and who... I'm very open and quite fluid. So this year, for example, I've got a bit of a dance theme going on. Right. So I've got various dancers involved. I've also got a war theme. And I've got a few other projects. But then I'm pretty open. You know, I also like collaborating with other people and hearing their ideas.
On the jazz side, you've got David Murray coming.
Yes, I'm very pleased about that.
And
yes.
On the down-home side, you've got Booker T coming, you know, who's performing, I know, this evening.
Yes, I mean, Booker T is a bit of a legend, obviously. I mean, it's kind of, we've got a couple of legends, because we've got Martha and the Vandellas at the end of the festival as well. I was just doing our closing party night. It's a great pleasure to have these people who are, you know, were big figures in my childhood, but as well as the Young Guns, you know, I've just come straight from the Acoustic Ladyland and Lead Bib double bill, which was really stonking.
Fantastic. So, I mean, is this entirely your responsibility, or do you get help? Do you get people feeding you with people who they think you would like to put in the festival?
It's entirely my responsibility, right. But having said that, I can't know everything. And while I am, I mean, one of the beauties of being a touring musician, I'm sure you know this, is that you're out on the road the whole time, and that enables me to go and see musicians play all the time.
Right.
And I'm abroad and touring and gigging and everything, and I get to see a lot of people do stuff, and I get great ideas. We had a wonderful bluegrass stroke punk band called The Wilders, who finished, were headline act last night, Party in City Light. I'd seen them play in a tiny, tiny bar in Ireland. They come from Kansas City. I'd done a gig myself with an orchestra. I went to see them. They were sensational, and they just, you know, tore the place up last night in front of 1,000 people. I mean, you know, it was just great to be able to bring them back from Kansas, and they were really electrifying.
So when you find these people and you think, okay, I've got some bluegrass, I've got some jazz, I've got some ballet, because you've got the English National Ballet also, and and you've got Django Bates, and you think, do you sit down thinking, oh, I'll put them there and I'll put them there? And
yeah, you know, and you've somehow got to make it cohere as well, because otherwise it could look rather random and rambling. So, for example, with English National Ballet, because of the dancing, they're collaborating with Arve Henriksen. And so I can hopefully bring together two audiences here. You know, they're doing, so they're going to take some of Arve's music from the Cartography album, and we're orchestrating it with their orchestra, doing new choreography, and Arve's there playing, as well as doing a bit of solo stuff. So I'm always looking for ways where things can hang together a bit, because I want to bring audiences together rather than divide them up.
So, you know, not only bringing audiences together, but offering a kind of fresh collaboration and perspective artistically as well.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, this is the whole thing. I mean, I remember we had Jason Yard last year, did a big commission for us with myself and Simbogile Kumalo, and, you know, that again, that was another example of bringing together audiences. I think there's a mixture of that and brand new collaborations, stuff in the Roman bars that's never been done before. There's Kathleen Ferrier, big new thing that's been done in honour of her. And then you have what I call your bankers, which are the names who come and do what they do. And the audiences know where they are, and they know why they've come, and they want to see them play their famous tune, or they want to see Stephen Hough play Chopin, or whatever it is, you know. It's my job to fulfil the expectations of the audience at the same time as taking them somewhere new as well.
Well, talking about Chopin, you're playing Chopin at the festival. I mean, is this a contract you do with yourself? You've got to book, you know, a certain amount from yourself?
Well, no. And normally I kind of collaborate. I'm actually doing a Sarti play. I'm playing the background music in a Sarti play. But and I was playing in Jason's piece, and I like playing with other. But it's the Chopinier, and I'm in love with the mazurkas. So I just thought, I'll do the complete mazurkas. And so it means that in between running around chasing Hammond organs or introducing people on stage, I'm running back to my little tiny rented flat and practicing a couple of mazurkas in between. In the hope that when I get to the last night, you know, and I've got to play these damn things, that I'll know what I'm doing.
Well, you obviously still love it.
And, I do.
And it's great to have you doing it. So
thanks.
So thank you for coming and speaking to us.
Thank you. Well, thank you for being here, and it's going to be a wonderful show again with you. Thank you.
Joanna McGregor. Now, to play for us, as promised, Julian Siegel, Phil Robson, Thad Kelly, and Gene Calderazzo. They are Partisans. We'll be right back.
Thanks very much. Real pleasure to come and play here at the festival. You're listening to Jane Colarazzo on the drums. Thaddeus Kelly on the bass. Phil Robson on guitar. Julian Siegel on saxophone. It's a real pleasure to be here. Thanks very much for coming and listening. A wonderful set by Robert too. We opened up with a tune called Advance, or Advance. And we continue with a tune called M Badgers, which is a bit of a Monty Python tribute, actually. A bit of an obscure one. But never mind. We're going to carry on with a composition by Phil Robson. This is called Monk. By the way, lots of this music is featured on our Babel Records album called By Proxy. Thank you.
Monk, played by Partisans, Phil Robson on guitar, Julian Siegel on the reeds, Gene Calderazzo on drums, and Thad Kelly on the bass. Before band rehearsals began this afternoon, I asked Phil Robson and Julian Siegel what they believe is responsible for Partisans' longevity.
Phil? Largely, it's based on friendship, really. We all hit it off as a group of musicians. I think we've been together officially 13 years now with this exact lineup. And, you know, we just try, we all do different things from time to time, and I think in a way that helps to keep it fresh so that when we come back to this we can really focus in on it. And I'd say really friendship, and, you know, we just really enjoy playing with each other, simple as that, really.
I mean, it's really unusual to keep a band together like that for over a decade. And what are your aims compositionally, Julian?
Well, Phil and I write for the band, so we've never actually written stuff together, but we just bring stuff to rehearsals, and then they get mutated and stretched, and the forms get changed, and things get doubled and taken away. It's just the thing and nature of the group, I think, that's playing for so long together, that we actually keep playing a lot of the old tunes because we find new things to say on them. So we tend to do our gigs without music, and so we've got a big repertoire of stuff, and it's quite nice. I don't think you can kind of buy that in music, you know, that kind of thing where you've got a real the music can go in and out of different directions. Compositionally, we just try and write things that are, well, not too hard to get together. Maybe we're not actually very good at rehearsing, are we?
Well, to be honest, it doesn't sound like simple music at all.
We rehearse really slow, and we get things together slowly, but, you know, and we don't really like to get up on stage reading, you know. It's like a
We've always had this thing where the music never really comes alive until we've done it on a gig, and we seem to do it on a gig, and maybe the first time there's a lot of rough edges, but that seems to be our way. We kind of run the heads and just try and get it, but we never really know until it becomes part of the set. And then once we've done it sort of for real, it starts to come alive, and then everybody starts to gradually change bits. And it's very hard to band if anybody ever depths it. It's quite difficult to do that because there's all sorts of stuff in there now that isn't written material, you know.
So tell us about specifically what you like about Thad Kelly on bass and Gene Calderazzo on drums.
Well, not while they're out the room.
Yes.
Yeah. Are they all? Oh. Oh, no, he's coming. Gene Calderazzo is well, it's a bit embarrassing to say why he's here. But he's just a fantastic drummer and gives the music a real spark and drive. And him and Thad together, Thad's always got a way of playing and finding harmonies that you didn't expect to happen. You know, as a composer, how you feel, Phil, but, you know, we write certain bass lines and then they get played and pretty much they get changed straight away, you know. And so writing, again, going back to the writing, it's like you kind of write with, I suppose, trying to get the atmosphere rather than the actual exactness. But the combination of those two guys seems to give a real spark. It's really exciting.
It's hard to exactly say what it was, but I think we knew straight away when we'd found the right lineup. You know, it just instantly started to gel, and there was a kind of natural creativity really amongst the guys. And the only other band I can really think of in a way that it reminds me of in terms of just longevity, and reminds me of the band The Fringe in Boston, George Garzones.
All right.
You know, I think in some ways it kind of feels like that, where you just keep coming back to it and you add another layer, and it's, you know, it's. I think we'll just keep doing that as long as it feels creative, really.
There seems to be a lot of pressure to come up with new things, you know. I mean, you know, the cycle of doing records and, you know, new tours, it's like, okay, you've done that, what are you going to do next? And of course, we've done different things outside of the band, but it's like, well, come back and listen, you know, because it's actually changed, I think, in the last year or 2 years, because we keep going off and doing other things, and we all come back and go and do other things. We come back and it's either we can suddenly play one of the pieces, you know, or there's some influence or learning experience that we've had, you know, changes.
Or could even just be listening to something new, just get influenced by some CD or something, you know, or having seen a band. And Wayne Krantz was a person like that for this band. We saw him in Brecon, I can't even remember when, quite, you know, some time ago, and we were lucky enough to end up playing with him at Cheltenham a few years ago, as you know, which was recorded for Jazz Lineup. But you know, he really influenced us when we saw his band, the way it worked, particularly with cues and stuff like that. They were working with cues and different tempos. And so, you know, just something like that can just send you in a certain direction, I think.
Yeah, we did a gig with him at Cheltenham. We did a thing, you know, it was a treat for me, like Phil on one side and Wayne Krantz on the other. Man, it was amazing.
Guitar heaven.
But, you know,
Armageddon.
It just, well, things like that were nice, but it's just coming back to the same group and having, you know, if we can't get together, we don't work. You know, it's like a real special thing, I think.
People have asked us why we didn't, you know, put more albums out, but that's another. It's all part of this process, really. This quite slow process, but it's always felt a natural time to put CDs out when we've done it. But I guess 4 in 13 years is not that many. But
maybe you'll put out some live ones.
We have thought about that, actually, yeah.
Because some of the greatest bands in history play the same material and keep releasing it in live albums, and that's where you see things develop.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be good to do, I think.
Yeah, I think we've been talking about that for about 10 years.
Yeah.
Maybe it's 20, time, you know,
another 10.
We do that.
Well, Phil Robson and Julian Siegel, thank you so much for speaking to us.
Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for being such a wonderful audience. It really is a fabulous place to play. We're having a great time. You're listening to the wonderful Gene Calderazzo on the drums. Thaddeus Kelly on bass. Julian Siegel on saxophones and clarinet. Phil Robson on guitar. Thank you. That was a tune called Lapdog. We're going to continue with a tune which is dedicated to the great Wayne Shorter, and this is called Wise Child. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks very much. You're listening to Gene Colarazzo on the drum set with cymbals. We have Thaddeus Kelly on the bass. Julian Siegel, saxophone. Thanks a lot. And Phil Robson on guitar. That was Wise Child, dedicated to wonderful Wayne Shorter, and we'd like to play a tune called Mirrors. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, partisans. We heard them very delicately segue from Mirrors into Last Chance, where they completely rocked out. And I was making a comment, actually, to someone at the back, saying that it's wonderful when they're going full pelt. And then Phil gives you one of his looks, you know. It's like, everything's all right. You know, we're just rocking out. Don't worry. Anyway, the Partisans are Julian Siegel on saxes and bass clarinet, Phil Robson on guitar, Gene Calderazzo on drums, and Thad Kelly on the bass. Well, that ends this broadcast from the Chapel Arts Centre, Bath, as part of the 2010 Bath International Music Fest. Our thanks to Robert Mitchell for his solo set earlier, and to the festival artistic director Joanna McGregor for talking to us, and of course to Partisans. At the start of the program, I mentioned adaptability, as guitarist Phil Robson is back on Jazz Lineup next week, this time with the BBC Big Band, who feature as part of the BBC's Big Concert, with Barry Forgy conducting and special guest Leanne Carroll singing. Till next time, from me, Julian Joseph, bye-bye.
Hello and welcome to BBC Radio 3 Through the Night with me, Jonathan Swain. Mostly Sibelius for this couple of hours, part of a Sibelius cycle with Petri Zachari conducting the Iceland Symphony Orchestra in Reykjavik in 2008. To come here, Sibelius' second symphony, and by way of an interval, a C.P. Bach quartet and Mozart's Exultate Jubilate. First of all, hear what some feel is Sibelius' most fascinating symphony, others his most daunting, the fourth. It's a piece from 1911 that, as Sibelius put it himself, is a protest against present-day music. The paradox is, it sounds more modern than the music it was protesting against. Strange, fragmented, lonely, and dark.
Thank you.